All right, so in preparing for this talk, I found this quote online, this poem online. Do not run through life so fast that you forget not only where you have been, but also where you are going. So as we talk about sequencing today, I'm going to kind of go through where we've been and how we got to where we are today, and then talk a little bit about possible directions of where we may be going in the future. So this is a hype cycle that a consulting agency uses. And basically what we have here on the y-axis is the visibility of the technology. Then we move through time. And so the first thing that happens is that we have some sort of technology trigger. We have a new technology developed. It rises in visibility. Then we have this peak of inflated expectations. Perhaps people are expecting more of the technology than is currently feasible. Perhaps it's been overhyped, those sorts of things. So then we have kind of this rebound where we go into this trough of disillusionment with the technology. There's a lot of doubt about its usefulness. Then we have a slope of enlightenment where we actually have some improvements and developments in the technology where we overcome some of those limitations that led to that disillusionment. And then we have a plateau of productivity where perhaps improvements in the technology slow, but now we really get the full benefit of that technology in a consistent and meaningful way. So let's talk about DNA in the beef industry. If we go back to the 1970s and 90s, we have several technology triggers that we see. So the first of which would be actual DNA sequencing. With this Sanger technology, we could sequence about 800 base pairs at a time. But it was quite laborious to do this for a large number of loci. We also had lots of different DNA markers that were developed. These DNA markers could then be used to associate regions of DNA with various traits. But these DNA markers were also not as high throughput, were more laborious to genotype a large number of these DNA markers. All right. So then we move into the late 90s and the early 2000s. This is when I got really interested in genetics and DNA in beef cattle. I remember opening up my Hereford Journal and seeing advertisements with stars and numbers and all of these things, and just the possibility of using that type of data to breed cattle really caught my attention and caught my curiosity. So this is kind of the height of gene test marketing. So in 2001, using this Sanger sequencing that I mentioned earlier, it cost $5,000 to sequence 1 million base pairs of DNA, okay? So over here, we've got price on a log scale. So we go from 10 cents, $1, $10, so on and so forth. And so in 2001, it cost $5,000 to sequence 1 million base pairs of DNA. Also in 2001, we have the first paper that talks about genomic selection and genomic prediction, or one of the first papers. So this idea was put forth that we can use lots, thousands of DNA markers spread evenly across the DNA of animals or plants to predict the performance and the breeding value of those animals. But the problem is, though the method was proposed in this paper, we didn't have the technology to actually do the genotyping to make this idea become a reality. So then we head into the trough of disillusionment. So There was work by several people in the research and extension community to try to validate some of these gene tests that had been marketed. Most of those gene tests failed the validation step, okay? This was due to the faulty assumptions that went into designing those gene tests. So those gene tests were based on the idea that using one or two genes or a handful of genes that we could predict the performance for complex traits. Well, the problem is that instead of one or two genes affecting those traits, there were hundreds or thousands of genes affecting those traits. And so this idea of just using a handful of genes did not pan out. The other problem with this approach is usually these gene markers were identified based on what we call a candidate gene approach. In a candidate gene approach, a researcher, based on their prior knowledge, handpicks genes that they want to research and investigate. So there isn't any data, usually, that's pointed for that gene being important in that herd or that population. It's the researcher's intuition leading them to those genes. And so the genes not being picked by actual data really proved to be a shortcoming of that approach. So now we can go to 2006. Now the price to sequence a million base pairs of DNA has dropped to $500. Okay, so that's a pretty nice drop. In 2006, we had a new sequencing technology developed. And the company that did, there were several new technologies that did it, but the one that's really taken the lion's share of the market has been this Solexa technology. Solexa was later bought by Illumina. And so this technology is going to be is going to prove to be very useful in sequencing the DNA and the genomes of animals. So in 2008, we move forward, and we have the release of the Illumina bovine SNP50 bead chip. So previously, I talked about how genotyping DNA markers was an extremely laborious task, took a lot of time, took a lot of reagents. With this assay, with this chip, we could now genotype 50,000 variants in a single reaction, okay? So now the problem of producing enough DNA marker information for an animal was basically solved. And so this was a big step forward for the cattle genomics community. The other thing that I'll point out is by the end of 2008, it now costs $3.81 to sequence a million base pairs of DNA. So we really see this price start to drop. And I should orient you to this gold line. This gold line up here is Moore's Law. And that's the observation that the purchasing price when you go to buy a computer doubles, the purchasing power when you go to buy a computer doubles each year. So the number of transistors, I believe, that we can actually fit on a computer chip doubles each year. And so this is kind of a benchmark for a rapidly improving technology. And so we see that DNA sequencing is really outpacing the improvement that we see in rapidly improving technologies. So we can move forward now to 2009. The bovine genome reference sequence is published. So what this is we took a single animal and we tried to sequence every single base pair of DNA for that animal. And we took all these sequences and we put them together in a puzzle, and we now had a scaffold and a, yeah, the scaffold is the best way to talk about it, and a reference in which to align and compare any other DNA and sequence data that we produce. So this is a really big resource for researchers, and that effort was accomplished in 2009. The other thing that happened is that now that we had that bovine SNP50B chip where we could genotype 50,000 markers, now we can implement that idea from 2001 to do genomic selection and genomic prediction. And so in 2009, the dairy industry actually implemented genomic prediction. And so this is a real game changer because now instead of looking at a handful of genes, which we know that approach failed, now we can take the entire DNA of an animal into account. In 2010, the Angus Association followed suit, and they released their first genomic predictions. And now the cost of sequencing a million base pairs of DNA is now down to 32 cents. Okay. In 2012, we had several other breed associations follow, such as the Hereford Association, Simmental Association, Limousine, Red Angus, etc. And so now the cost to sequence a million base pairs of DNA is now down to 7 cents. So from the beginning of this graph in 2001 to the end of this graph in 2014, the price of that sequencing has dropped 5 orders of magnitude. So it went from $5,000 to 5 cents. The change in that price is just astonishing. I love to talk to people about that because, you know, the price of my car has not dropped that much. Other prices that we talk about have not dropped that much. And so this drop in price has really changed the way geneticists can go about their research. Questions and problems that were basically impractical or intractable previously, we can now actually generate the data to tackle those problems. And so it's a really exciting time in the area of cattle genomics because the ability to generate the necessary data is just astonishing now. Show that graph to you in a little different format. Before we had the y-axis on a log scale. Now we've put it back on the normal scale. And so you can see how rapidly this price has dropped in the last 15 years. It's really been incredible. Okay, so where are we going next? So now that sequencing has become relatively so cheap, how are we going to use it, and where are we going next? Well, the first thing we're going to do is sequence lots of animals. There's an international consortium called the Thousand Bowl Sequencing Consortium. I heard recently that they're actually up to 2,000 animals that have been contributed to that consortium, for which we've basically sequenced all 3 billion base pairs of those animals' DNA. We also have individual groups that are sequencing large number of animals and doing so using various strategies to be able to get to accurate sequence and genotype information. And typically we focus on influential animals when we do this sequencing, and we've been very fortunate to get support from several of the breed associations. All right, so now that we have all of this sequence data, what do we do next? So the bovine SNP50 assay and the GGP assays and some of those different SNP chips, they are basically like mile markers along the chromosome and the DNA of an animal, okay? But what we really want to get to is the points of interest, right? We don't care what's at the mile marker. What we want to know is what's at the point of interest. And so here in green, I've got the mile markers. So these are the SNP50 DNA markers. And based on these patterns, based on the genotype patterns at these markers, we can actually infer the genotypes at millions of other markers. So based on 50,000 markers, we can infer the unobserved genotypes at 700,000 markers. At those 700,000 markers, we can then use that information to infer the genotypes at 11 million markers. So now when we're doing an analysis, instead of looking at 50,000 markers, we're looking at millions of markers. Okay, and so what this allows us to do is when we do our analysis, we're able to do a much finer scale and a much more precise identification of the regions of DNA, of the regions of the genome, that are actually important and influential in the trait or the analysis that we're looking at. So that's what I've highlighted here is these red bars, is after we do our analysis, now we know these regions are important. Having this additional data has been helpful. It's actually allowed us to identify regions associated with a trait that we missed when we looked at those same populations and same data sets with the SNP50 or with the GGP panel. So this higher density of genotype information has really proved fruitful in better understanding the genetics of these traits. So where else might we be going? One of the things that I think we're going to see, and you probably noticed it, is we're going to have more types of SNP chips. So I don't remember if it was today or last night, but GeneSeq was talking about their low-density panels, their ultra-high-density panels. So they have panels where they have 1,000 to 6,000 SNPs. They have panels where they have 150,000 SNPs. So I think this is going to be a trend that we continue to see, that we see more variation in the type of SNP panels that we're using. Another thing that we're going to see is rather than putting the mile markers on our SNP chips, we're going to start putting the points of interest on the SNP chips. The other thing that we're going to do is some of these lower density panels, right now we choose the markers based on their effectiveness in using an imputation, in inferring those unobserved genotypes. What we might see in the future is that we actually put SNPs on a panel based on their functional importance. And so when I talk about function, that's a variant that is either going to change the sequence of a protein or that's going to change the abundance of a protein. So these are variants that are actually changing things, affecting things. The other thing that we might see is rather than using the mile markers in our genomic predictions, we might start using the actual causal variants or variants that are very closely linked with the causal variant. So even though it's very difficult to identify the causal variants, even if we don't get to that goalpost of finding the causal variant, if we get closer to that goalpost, our predictions should end up being more accurate and reliable. So is this focus on causal variants actually an avenue to try to get over this difficulty of creating predictions that work in multiple breeds? So right now, if we train a prediction in Angus, we can't use that prediction in Hereford. Okay. But if we actually focus on the causal variants, can we start producing predictions that work in multiple populations? So I talked about these gene tests, right, earlier on, and how they kind of fall flat, and how researchers picked the candidate genes to investigate in those processes. What we're going to see now is we're going to go back to trying to identify those important causal variants, but now instead of a researcher using their intuition to pick the genes, we're actually going to have the data tell us which genes are important. And instead of using a handful of genes, we'll be using hundreds or thousands of genes in those genomic predictions. One other thing that we may see is we may see genomic surveillance of influential sires. So what do I mean by this? When a breed association has a sire that reaches a certain number of progeny equivalents, that breed association's research foundation or some other funding mechanism pays the $5,000 to sequence the entire DNA of that bull. And so now we... So how do we identify if a bull is influential? You know, do we say they need to have 10,000 progeny equivalents? Do they need to have 5% of the annual registrations? Some sort of scenario where they hit this trigger point and the foundation just go ahead and pays for that bull to be sequenced. What do I mean by progeny equivalents? Basically, it's the average number of chromosomes that that animal inherits from that sire or that grandsire. So if I'm a progeny, so the progeny of a bull get half of their chromosomes from their sire. So we count that as one progeny equivalent. Grand progeny get on average 25% of their DNA from a grandsire. So we cut that progeny equivalent in half and we do the same thing for grand progeny. So we're kind of looking at the impact of that bull on the breed. So what does sequencing these sires allow us to do? It allows us early identification of new variants that may become important in the population. So some of these variants might be good, some of these variants might be bad. These might lead to embryonic losses or genetic abnormalities, but they also might be things that increase the performance. Another thing that we could possibly do with genomic information is if we actually know the variants that were responsible for inbreeding depression, can we actually use that DNA information to manage inbreeding within a population? So hopefully what we see with the use of DNA technology in animal breeding is that the visibility of the current implementation of the technology is hopefully going to be higher, and the trust and the opinion of this technology will be higher than when we had this peak of inflated expectations. This slope of enlightenment is going to be a long haul. Okay, the genome is a very complex system. To go from the A's, C's, G's, and T's to an organism is a very complex process. There's 3 billion base pairs of DNA, about 3 billion base pairs of DNA within the cattle genome. And so this is a very complex system. It's going to take us a while to get out all of the kinks in using sequence data in cattle breeding, in beef breeding. It's going to take us a while to really optimize the best way to use genomic prediction in beef breeding. But one of the things that I want to reassure you of is that the technology is working. We can look at other industries like the dairy industry, and we can see that the technology is working there. And so this technology... Hopefully we're out of this trough of disillusionment and we're all kind of on board with this technology. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. I'd point you to this new educational website that we just launched this afternoon called ebeef.org. It's a resource for information on beef breeding and genetics. So
you keep talking about it, I'll pull it up.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all I had to say about it. The other thing is, check out my blog. I try to keep it updated. If I'm not writing grants, it stays updated better than when I am writing grants. So, any questions about DNA sequencing in beef breeding?